Now Xerxes was the king of all the world. There was no man in the land who was more powerful than Xerxes. This man had at his fingertip command the most powerful naval forces and infantry and cavalry forces that had been amassed anywhere ever. He ruled over 127 different provinces, from India to Ethiopia to Rome. It all belonged to him. And in order to try and impress the governors of all of these lands with how powerful he was, he had a 6-month-long demonstration and display of his grandeur. And at the end of the 6 months' great celebration, all of the princes and governors from his 27 provinces were brought to his palace at Susa. And there they were given everything that they could desire. The king had instructed his servants to allow each one of the princes and governors to have all of his requests fulfilled. And now finally, as the grand culmination of it, there was a great feast. We're told a great huge tent had been erected, for the regular palace banquet hall was not large enough to accommodate the great and important people who had arrived. The finest of food was passed around, the finest of wine. And finally, with drinking all of this very fine wine, it began to take its effect on the men. And it even took its effect on Xerxes himself. For as he was sitting there looking out over all of these important people, he had really impressed them. But he finally wanted to really impress them with something even more spectacular than what he had been able to show them yet. He had decided that he would show them his queen, Queen Vashti. That she should come in before all of these drunken men, and there she should display her gorgeous beauty to them. Now, she happened to be at that time having a great banquet for all of the wives of those men that were in with the king. And the servants came and they said to her, "The queen, madam, you have been requested to come. And the king wants you to dress in something very, very alluring. He wants to display you and your beauty to these other men." And Vashti would not come. She said, "I will not display myself before all those vulgar drunken men." And the couriers went back to the room and they said to the king, "She refuses to come, sir." And there was a great gasp around the room. The queen had refused a command of the king. She had refused to come. And the king was embarrassed and didn't know what to do. And the people that were sitting there, they begin to say, "Oh, this is scandalous. Do you realize what this will do to our homes? If our wives find out that the queen disobeyed the king, we'll never be able to control our wives again." Truly, this must have been the beginning of women's lib. And all those male chauvinists were so worked up about this that they came to the king. And they said to him, "Oh, king, live forever. Sir, we have to live with our wives. You have to make an example of this woman. You can't let her do what she's done and get away with it. Sir, you must make a pronouncement in the laws of the Medes and the Persians that can never be changed, that she can never again enter before your presence." Well, he thought, "Yes, we'll fix her. That's what we'll do." And he signed the law, and the law of the Medes and the Persians could never be changed, not even by the king. Now, that was fine for a few days. But a few days went by and he began to miss his lovely one. And he realized that in the foolishness of all that he had done, he would never be able to see her again. And he loved her and he missed her. And he fell into great depression and he was very morose. And finally, some of his counselors came with an idea that they thought might brighten up his day. They said, "Sir, you obviously need a new queen. Tell you what, sir, why don't we have all of the most beautiful ladies from all 127 provinces come? And we will have the grandest beauty pageant that the world has ever seen. And the winner of the pageant will not be Miss Medo-Persia. She will be your queen." Well, now that's an offer a man would have a hard time refusing. And so he said, "That's a grand idea. Let's do that." And so the word went out all over the land, and pretty soon beautiful maidens, gorgeous, lovely creatures, begin to come in from all over the world to the palace. Now, it just so happens that they could not come into him immediately. But there were several things that had to be done to prepare them. Would you believe that the preparations before they could come and see the king took 12 months? That for 12 months after these ladies came in, they were massaged each day, we're told, with the oil of balm and other precious things, and they were perfumed and combed and manicured, and finally, after 12 months of that, under the care of a man by the name of Haggai, they were ready to come in before the king. Now, this was not your average Miss America beauty pageant with Burt Park singing. For these ladies came one by one to the king in the evening and stayed till morning. And then they went into a huge harem area where they would stay for the rest of their life. Only to be see the king again if he should remember to call them by name. Now, the Jews, many thousands of them, were still living in Medo-Persia. They had been brought there by Nebuchadnezzar under Babylon. They had been freed to go back to Jerusalem and back to Israel. But many of them chose to remain in Persia, because they had been born there. It was their home. They didn't want to immigrate back to Israel. And there was one particular Jew who happened to be in the employment of the king. His name was Mordecai. And when Mordecai heard that there was this pageant going on, he immediately thought of his cousin, a beautiful, beautiful young Jewish maiden by the name of Hadassah. She had been under his care since both her mother and father had died. And she was truly as beautiful as her name, Hadassah. It meant myrtle, flower. And she was a flower. And he knew how beautiful she was. And so he brought her to Haggai. And he said to her, he said, "I would like to submit a new candidate before the king. And her name is," and he changed her name at that point from Hadassah to Esther. And the word Esther means star. We still have that similarity in the word asteroid, little star. Asteroid, Esther, it has the same verbal roots to it. And as he brought her there and he presented her, we're told that Haggai immediately saw that she was far superior to any of the other maidens that had come in. He was so sure that she was going to be the queen after the king saw her, that he immediately assigned her 7 handmaidens to do everything that she needed. And for the next 12 months, these 7 handmaidens wait on her hand and foot. Finally, after a year, it is time for her to go before Xerxes. Haggai, we're told, himself picked out the finest clothes for her. He himself watched over while her hair was fixed. He gave her the final instructions. And she presented herself before the queen, before the king, and he was so taken with her that that was the end of the beauty pageant. She became the queen of Persia. There was just one little bit of counsel that Mordecai had given to her. He said, "Don't tell anyone you're a Jew." And so the king married her, having no awareness of all of her ethnic background. She was a lovely lady that had captivated his every thought. Now, it just so happens that during this time, the king decided that he was awfully tired of administrating the kingdom. You know, up all day, signing bills of legislation, sitting on finance committees, trying to decide what war division went where and what military appropriation should be made. And so he decided that he would take it easy and select for himself a prime minister. And he looked out over his kingdom and he found a man who was very capable by the name of Haman. Haman became the prime minister. Now, Haman was a very capable man. The only problem with Haman was Haman knew that he was a very capable man. Haman was so thrilled with being elevated to the second most important position in the kingdom that he became almost unbearable to live with. The king had given him a very important signet ring to wear. He had actually made a proclamation that as Haman walked through the palace, that everyone who saw him had to bow down before Haman. He was such an important man. Why, Haman would get up in the morning and walk to the mirror. He'd put on his royal robes. You know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Oh, none one else but Haman. Haman loved Haman. And there was just one problem that really bothered Haman. And that is, as he walked through the palace each day, there was one man who would not bow down to him. And that was dear old Mordecai. He wouldn't do it. Mordecai was a Jew. He would not bow down himself according to the commandments to any man or thing or item. He would only bow down to Yahweh. And it really stuck under Haman's skin that this man would not bow down before him. And he found out that he was a Jew. And he decided that he was going to get revenge on all of the Jews because of Mordecai. And one day when he was in conference with King Xerxes, he said to the king, "Oh, sir," he said, "you know, things are going well in the kingdom, but there is one group of people in our midst. Well, sir, they just are not cooperating. Sir, they live only unto themselves, and they're just not really part of the group. Sir, I request from you the privilege of exterminating these traitors." And he painted such a poor picture of the Jewish people that Xerxes began to consider it. And then to top it off, he said, "Sir," he says, "now I understand that this will cause extreme expense to go to the trouble of exterminating all of these people. If you would allow me to do this, sir, I will pay into your personal treasury." Now catch this. "I will pay into your personal treasury 375 tons of silver." Haman also was a very rich man. And the king said, "Well, if you really want it that badly, all right." And the decree was signed, the law to the Medes and the Persians, a law that could not be changed. It was done. The Jews would be executed on a specific day that had been chosen by lot. And the word went out for the Persian postal system to all 127 provinces that on a such and such a day, the month of Adar, all of the Jews should be killed. Man, woman, child, baby, infant, everyone slaughtered. Now, meanwhile, while this was going on, we must not fail to mention the fact that not everybody in the kingdom was happy with Xerxes. And there were two of his men who decided that they were going to assassinate him. But they made the mistake of telling somebody. And that somebody told somebody, and that somebody told somebody, and then somebody told Mordecai. And Mordecai told Esther, and Esther told the king, and after a thoroughgoing Senate investigation, those two men who had plotted against Xerxes' life were killed. And it was very faithfully recorded in the king's journals. It just so happens that the king forgot all about it and didn't give it any more thought. So let us forget about it for a few minutes and not give it any more thought. We'll think about it again later. Now, Mordecai heard that all of the people were Jews were going to be killed. That meant him. That meant all of his nieces and nephews and uncles and aunts. And we're told that he took off his regular fine garments that he wore as a representative in the court of the king. And then he put on a horrible old gunny sack. And he took ashes out of a fire and dumped them on his hair and let them run down over his face. And he looked awful. And he came and he sat in the entranceway of the palace and he cried and moaned aloud. And Esther, somebody came and they said, "Hey, your uncle's out here making an absolute fool out of himself." And she sent a messenger out and she said, "Uncle, what are you doing? Why don't you stop that? Go get your clothes back on." And Mordecai sent a message back into Esther and he said, "Listen, haven't you heard what's going to happen to our people?" He said, "It is going to happen even to you. Because you are a Jew, don't you forget it. Even though you are the queen, you are a Jew. You must go before the king and ask for something to be done to save our people." And Esther sent a message back out and she said, "I cannot go before the king unless he asks for me to come. If I go before the king without his request, well, anyone who came before Xerxes without his personal request was immediately..." Even the queen. And she said, "The king has not, for over a month now, has not asked for me to come to see him." She said, "I cannot see him until he asks." And Mordecai sent a message back to her. And he said, "Esther, was it not for this moment and this hour that you were made queen? Long she must have pondered that. Finally, she stirs up all of the courage that she has within herself. And she sends a message back to her cousin. "I will go before the king. And if I perish, I perish. But I will go." For the next 3 days, she and all of her handmaidens and helpers did not eat or drink. All of them fasted as she prepared herself. And you better believe if she was beautiful the first time she went before the king, she must have been glorious as she prepares now. For now she is to approach the king with a chance of death. After 3 days, we're told she suddenly, in the midst of Xerxes' labors of the day, appeared at the back of the palace room. He at first sees someone moving, and he's immediately disturbed. "Who is it that's moving back there?" And then he saw her, and she was radiant and ravishing, and he took a deep breath. And his heart skipped 3 or 4 beats. And we're told he held out his golden scepter and said, "Esther, come here." And she glided up
through the courtyard room to his throne. And he wet his lips. And he said, I will give you anything, up to half of my kingdom. She must have looked good. Oh, she said, sir, I have been sitting in my room longing for you, pining away the hours waiting for you to call me. Oh, I miss being with you so much. All I desire is tonight, could you come and have dinner with me?
That's all you want? Yes, fine. I'll be there. What time?
Yeah. Oh, she said, by the way, one more thing. Could you bring Haman along?
Oh, fine.
Surely we'll bring Haman along. Well, I'll tell you, when Haman found out that he was invited to eat privately with the king and the queen, there was no getting near him. He was going to eat alone with the king and the queen. I mean, how much more important can you get than that? And that night, he was there with his finest on. And he supped with the king and made chit-chat and laughed and thought he was really the, cat's meow. And that night when he went home, he told his wife and he told his friends and he told them how wonderful it all was. But he said, as wonderful as it all is, he said, there is one thing that just still bothers me. Oh, what's that? Mordecai. If I was rid of that Mordecai, I would be rid of everything that bothers me in life. And someone said, well, you're the prime minister. Ask the king if you can hang him. Yes, that's what I'll do. And immediately that evening, he had gallows erected in the middle of the city, 86 feet high. They were going to hang Mordecai so high that everyone could see him. Now, Haman went to bed that night with visions of grandeur. In the morning, he was going to hang his Mordecai. So in the morning, when the sun came up, he came to the palace. And he knew that the first thing that he would ask the king when he got into the king's presence that day was to hang Mordecai. It just so happens that that night, while the gallows were being built, the king couldn't sleep. And because he couldn't sleep, he decided that he would ask somebody to come in and read to him. He didn't have television to turn on the late show. His late show was somebody coming in and reading to him. So somebody came in to read to him, and it just so happened that they read to him about the assassination plot that had been perpetrated on him a short time before. And as they was being read to him, Mordecai's name came up as the one who had saved the king's life. And the king rolled over in bed and he said, what did we ever do for Mordecai? And the man who was reading the record said, nothing, sir. Mordecai was never rewarded at all. Oh, he said, we'll fix that first thing in the morning. And so first thing in the morning when he came in, he said to the guards that were standing there, he said, is there any of my important men outside waiting? And they said, yes, sir, Haman is outside. Fine, bring Haman. Haman came in. Before Haman could speak and ask to hang Mordecai, the king said, Haman, what would you do? What would you do if you were going to honor someone very much? Well, Haman had just eaten with the king and queen last night, privately. By the way, he had been invited again tonight to eat with them, two times. Haman could only think that the king was talking about one person. Haman. And
so Haman said, "Sir," he said, "if you want to really honor someone," he said, "you ought to take one of your good royal robes, put it on him. Take one of your good jewel-laden rings and put it on his finger. Put him on one of the finest horses that you have in your kingdom. And take one of your most important men to lead that horse through the city and have him announce clear and loud to all the people, 'Look who the king wishes to honor.'" "Oh," Xerxes said, "Haman, that's an excellent idea. I want you to immediately go get Mordecai and put him on a horse, and I want you to lead it through the city." Poor Haman. He had come to ask for Mordecai's head. And now he is humiliated. Everybody in the city knows, except the king, what Haman thought of Mordecai. And all that day, here's Haman leading this beautiful horse through the city, one street, down the next street, with Mordecai dressed in royal robes. And Haman is saying, "Look who the king wishes to honor, and look how he honors him." I tell you, we're told when Haman got home that evening, he was so embarrassed, so humiliated. And as he was sitting with his head in his hands, trying to figure out how to handle the situation, there was a knock on the door and said, "Sir, it's time for you to come and eat with the king and queen again tonight." And he tried to console himself, and he got his clothes on again, and he went, and he felt a little better as he was sitting there eating with Esther and the king. And finally, as the three of them are sitting there eating together, the king said to her, "Esther, this has just been, you know, one of the finest times of my life. Now really, seriously, let me do something for you. Let me help you. What can I give you that would make you happy?" And she turned to the king and she said, "Sir, there was someone in the palace who was trying to kill me." The king turned cold and white. Haman turned cold and white, for remember, Haman does not know that she is a Jew. And Haman sat up across the table and he said, "Who would try and kill the queen?" And the king said, "Who would try and kill the queen?" And Esther said, "Oh, sir, I am a Jew. And can you not see Haman on the other side of the table begin to fade away? She's a Jew." "Yes," she said. "And the wicked evil one who is trying to kill me and all of my people is," and she pointed to Haman. Xerxes, we're told, was so filled with anger and wrath that he arose from his seat and he went right outside and he began to pace up inside in the courtyard outside, trying to decide what to do and how to handle his anger. Now, meanwhile, back in the room, Esther is left with Haman. Haman realizes that he's in big trouble. And he comes around the table and we're told that he fell right on her couch, for they reclined on couches as they ate. And he came around and he fell right on her couch and she grabbed her by her legs and he began to plead with her. "Oh, please," he said, "I didn't know. Help me. Don't let it be like this." And he's hanging on and he's pleading. And just as he's laying on her couch with her hanging under her legs pleading, the king walks back in. And he looks across and he sees them on her on the couch and he says, "Would you do it in my own presence? Would you violate my queen?" And about that time, one of the guards who heard all the noise came into the room and one of the guards says, "By the way, master, there's a gallows out here, 86 feet high." He says, "I think we ought to use it." And the king said, "I think we should too." And Haman was taken and Haman was hanged on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. But the law of the Medes and the Persians could not be changed. On the 15th day of Adar, all of the Jews were to be killed. And so Mordecai, Mordecai now became the prime minister. Mordecai, who now becomes the prime minister, comes to the king and says, "Sir, we must do something." And arrangements were made that all of the armies of Persia would be assembled together to protect the Jewish people. The peoples of the land were still free to kill the Jews on the 15th day of Adar. But in order to get to them, they would have to fight their way through the Persian army. And thus it was that God's people were spared from this horrible plot. Because God had worked it all out long before Haman came along. God had worked it out when a little girl by the name of Hadassah, Myrtle, was born. And she was born for that one grand moment to save her people.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.